Welcome to The Vinyl Preacher, your weekly podcast where we talk about the Bible and make a playlist. Matt Cadle, pastor at St. Mark's Lutheran Church here on the West Coast, Los Angeles, California.
And I'm Zach Paris, coming to you from the Vinyl Preacher office here on the west side of the East Coast state of North Carolina, in Asheville, Matt.
Yeah, out there on the East Coast, it's time zones. It's been a week of time zones.
Time zones are
trying to follow basketball happening across the country. Trying to follow Eurovision on another continent. What time is when? What's happening? I don't even know. Where are we? When are we?
Some things about the Bible in Bible times, Matt, the ancient Near East, would be easier, and some things would be harder. It would be easier because you would not have to worry about time zones because they didn't have watches.
Didn't have watches. Nope.
That'd be easier. It'd just be day and night. That's all you got to worry about.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. But we do have to worry about time. We're getting this podcast out a little bit late because I was traveling. When we would have known.
You've been on the road, man.
On the road. I was in Seattle, Washington. Wonderful place. One of my favorite places. Even stopped for some Top Pot donuts at your suggestion.
You got to get
donuts
them donuts.
For lunch. It's a great lunch.
Donut lunch.
I had every intention of having a half of two flavors, saving the other half for the next morning.
And it done now works.
It didn't happen. It just didn't happen.
That was a good thought, man.
It was a good thought. But I was up there for the Organizing for Mission Network contextual gathering. Highly recommend checking that out. And that's what I did, yeah.
How was it? Was the event good?
Yeah. It's good. They're always good. It's always good.
Okay.
Got to reconnect. I don't know if I met any listeners this time. Sometimes you run into people, long time listener of the podcast. yeah, it was good. It was good. But I made it back in time, made it back Friday night, in plenty of time to watch the Eurovision final, which apparently you did not watch on Saturday.
I didn't watch it on Saturday. I had events in my busy, busy life scheduled, and we tried to get home. Here's the problem, man. Here's the problem. And a couple of things.
Despite you sending me a calendar invite, to watch this thing, you didn't watch on time.
Hey, you know, you gotta deal with life that comes at you as it comes at you. The thing about it, Matt, on Peacock, which is the service I happen to subscribe to, so that was easy for me. We mentioned it with Caleb. There had not been any news or notes about whether Johnny Weir was going to host it this year, and at least on my end, Matt, I saw no Johnny Weir. There were no hosts, no countryside hosts like other countries usually. Was that your experience?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So no Johnny Weir. You just got the international feed, which was pretty good. We'll get into that. The thing I want to complain about, Matt, is we got home from the things we had been occupied by and we wanted to watch. So I go to watch it, and my only option is to watch live. That's the only, it won't let me like rewind because it was still going on. That was the problem. Took almost 4 hours. It was still going on and had an hour to go, but I wanted to watch from the beginning, and it would let me rewind like an hour, but it wouldn't let me go back to the beginning. So we couldn't watch it at all on Saturday night and had to wait for the replay version to come up on Peacock.
Sure.
So that was a pretty difficult time for me and my family.
Pretty difficult time, yeah.
But once we finally got to it on Sunday, really enjoyed the co-host, the official co-host. I thought this year they were great. Lots of great banter, lots of good jokes. There was the European thong contest jokes. There was a lot of back and forth about, or not back and forth, a recurring joke about how the Swedes promise in the future not to send Loreen so that other countries can win. And then there was the weird recurring joke about how the winner would get the Eurovision Song Contest trophy and a Gilmore Girls DVD from season 3, I think.
Oh, Yeah, good banter.
How was your Eurovision experience, Matt?
Well, unfortunately, my children were really, really invested in Germany winning for reasons I don't understand. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it was their first
been there.
I enjoyed the song, but it was every single time they would announce some points going somewhere, which 90% of the time seemed to be Switzerland. My children would just groan as if like this was the worst news that they had ever received, and I'm just like, they don't have a lifetime of following the Chicago Cubs, so they're not used to like, you just accept it. It's fine, you know.
Yeah.
But no, it was existential every time. Yeah, they're Dodgers fans, exactly. Yeah.
We had the opposite experience in my home, Matt. My child was all in on Switzerland and squealed a lot. and then, spoilers, don't listen to this part of the podcast if you still, though the New York Times ruined it for me with a notification on my phone. So thanks a lot for that, New York Times. Switzerland wins. When Switzerland won, my child cried. Tears of joy. That's where I'm at in life.
It's great. It's a joyful moment. What was the name of the Swedish artist, Swiss artist, I should say, Nemo?
Swiss artist was Nemo.
Yeah, Nemo seemed very excited. It was a very positive response, performance. I remember last year watching the Loreen performance with special props and everything. It was very memorable.
Mm-hmm.
But Nemo needed no props, just running around the stage with joy. That's it.
Kind of.
He had props, like, or they had props the first performance, but the encore, running around.
The tilty stage was a good, I thought, used well.
Yeah.
Nemo had a circle or disc that like rotated around and they did fun things on it. But
I was surprised to see the UK get 0 points. The dreaded 0 points.
It was not good, Matt. That performance was not good. The zero song points. Is like silly and dumb, right? But like but not bad. But that the boxing thing, that was just not, it was not good.
Didn't work.
Good,
didn't work. Let's see. What else did I notice?
I thought Rimton Tagi Dim, which finished second, and was thought to had a lot of momentum going into the contest. I thought the performance was flat, Matt. I think that's what it was.
Oh. Like
it was, I thought the performance itself, the staging, everything about it, unremarkable. It was just a way better song to listen to on Spotify. Because, I mean, that was my main, that has been for the past couple years, my main like reflection is like how different of an experience it is. I've listened to all the songs on Spotify 100 times by the time I get to see them, and how well the performance itself conveys
the vibe,
the energy that I get listening to it on the Spotify.
That's
and you really
good.
Like it does reveal the vocals, like the vocals get revealed because the vocals do have to be live, and you can tell whose vocals got doctored a bit on the in the studio.
Yeah, that's a good experienced Eurovision viewer observation. Because, yeah, we're listening to songs in the car, you know, and you're like, all right, you got your faves, you got your rankings, but the performance is a whole different beast, huh?
Yeah. I was let down by Lanoia, I felt like the song, again, and we got, in my house, we got really invested in the video, which is a really cool, weird, interesting video. The performance, though, didn't live up to the video. The video, way more interesting. Didn't have any of the elements. The hair, like, wasn't.
Yeah.
Thing, right? Which is fine. You don't have to do that. Like, you don't got to be married to the hair, but.
Sure.
It was something provocative and interesting. I don't know. And it, it suffered justly. Matt fell down to coming in at seventh there.
Mm. I was surprised after all the controversy that y'all had brought up that Israel did pretty well, actually. Like, they were not as low as I would have thought, given all the controversy.
Well, I mean, I don't know, Matt. They finished fifth. They had 52 points from the juries and 323 votes from the televote. I don't know what that means. It's a good song. I was surprised by that as well. Yes.
the Netherlands got kicked out. Unfortunate, since my children also really loved Europapa. But then they didn't even show up to give their points, which was pretty fun.
The Dutch could television not be reached. Broadcasting company, not into, yeah. So if you don't know, Joost, or not, is it Joost? It's Joost, right?
J-O-O-S-T,
yeah. Has had a song called Europapa. Qualified for the finals easily. Was a favorite in the top five in the odds there. And announcement comes out on Saturday morning, East Coast time, that they've been disqualified. And it turns out they did a... facts are hard to find right now, but there was some sort of threatening gesture, words between Joost, the performer, and Eurovision staff that led to the disqualification. The police are involved now and are investigating. The Dutch broadcasting company felt like it was was very public in saying that it was an extreme reaction. The public, especially the public that's been real critical of Eurovision for allowing Israel to participate, really jumped on that and has been talking about that. So a whole mess of things, Matt.
It's a lot. Mess of things. Whole mess of things. Well, we enjoyed it. And I got to say, this year especially, I appreciated this is my thank you to you, Zach, for bringing
welcome
this Eurovision fold. Because you know, there's the event on Saturday, but now I do feel like now I have this playlist of songs that I wouldn't otherwise have discovered. You know, and sometimes you just, this is like the time of year when you need new music, especially if you didn't go to Coachella and get that list of artists you're discovering. You know, you go, okay, like here's a whole list of like 40 songs that I could listen to all summer long. So yeah, that's a good way to discover some new stuff out there.
Last tidbit, Matt. A little surprised that No Rules didn't finish higher than it did. The Windows 95 man entry for Finland, which was a lot of fun and surely a crowd favorite. Only 31 points on the televote, which you'd think they'd move up there, but no.
It was definitely a favorite here in my house.
Yeah. Finishing all the way down in 19th on the right side of the graphic. They divided the two columns. So if you finish on the right side, it's not as good as on the left side. So surprising. Again, it is my annual reminder that I am actually not European and don't have my finger on the pulse of European tastes. That was hammered home to me when in our group text with Caleb Craner, senior correspondent for Eurovision for the Vinyl Preacher, when I said I didn't understand Portugal, which got a lot of love from the juries, but not from the public. And Caleb said, yeah, well, maybe it's a thing that like older Europeans are into. And I forgot about the geriatric European vote. Really must have carried Portugal.
Yeah, it's like the Grammy voters that were attuned to.
Yeah, but in the end, Matt, Nemo from Switzerland broke the code.
Broke the
and
code.
The Eurovision trophy. Did you see that part?
Yeah, isn't that what happened? I was like, did he just?
Yes.
Oh, they just
At the end of his, like, when you win, you get to do one more performance, and it actually seems really intense because it's 90 seconds after they announce you won, you are on stage performing your song again.
Yeah,
and they've given him the trophy. They've given them the trophy, and then at the end, they give it back to him, and they kind of like slam it on the stage. But not really, it didn't seem that violent, but like definitely like... the microphone broke, just snapped right off the stand.
Yep.
If you haven't, do yourself a favor. Go check out the Eurovision 2024 playlist over on Spotify. Start with the winner, the code.
Mm-hmm. Good stuff. Anything else happen over the weekend? What else we got to cover?
I had in the notes for this episode that was going to be recorded last week that we might could talk about the Nuggets being eliminated from the playoffs.
Not yet.
They were down 2-0, and I had given up all hope and faith, Matt. At that point, I wasn't being able to watch it because the game started 10:30 p.m. Eastern, which is nuts, Matt. How?
7:30 p.m. Pacific. Perfectly reasonable.
Come on. It's brutal. But the three-time MVP, the 3VP, can't be denied, Matt. They've evened the series up. I still don't feel great, necessarily. Though, when I wake up in the morning or in the middle of the night, more likely, I'll check my phone and see what happened. Yeah, I'm very scared of Anthony Edwards. He's a very scary guy. Always kind of love Jamal Murray. But I've never have felt like I have. He's capable of such great things, obviously, and has done great things. You never really, like, you're getting Joker. Joker is going to give you Joker. Like, you're like, that's not a question. Like, he just doesn't have bad. I mean, that's the insane thing about him, right? Like, that everybody takes for granted. Like, he does not have bad game. Like, there's no such thing as a Joker bad game. Mm-hmm. Like, if he's not shooting very well, he'll just like get a triple double still and like do all these other things and change the game. Jamal is capable of bad games. So, I mean, that's what my critique is here. It's not a very heavy critique, Jamal. I know Jamal's a big listener to the podcast. It's that Jamal is a human basketball player, and it feels like less of a sure thing than the alien from Serbia with the Sambor shuffle, who has no, there are no questions in my mind that the Joker will play well tonight.
Yeah, I'm glad they tied it up. I'm glad they're going to like defend their title. Like, I'm just happy about all of that. I hope it goes 7 games or 6. But I think the whiplash has been wild from the Timberwolves are the 91 Bulls, and they're going to be unstoppable. Now they're going to sweep the whole playoffs. They're going straight to the finals. They're going to beat everybody maybe the Nuggets, this still counts as a sweep if they win 4 games in a row. Like, what? Like, what are we talking about? Like, like, I just have no idea what's going to happen at this point. It's fun to watch.
You have to tell me how fun it is to watch later tonight.
Well, it's also the time of year for Pentecost, which I understand you are preaching on.
Hey, this is a working preacher podcast this week.
Wow.
I got to do it. Doing some pinch hitting, man.
Pinch hitting? Are you going to pull out some old Pentecost sermons and I'm not sermons so much as your go-to images?
My ideas. I thought about it because I've got a really good one, but I think I'm going to write a real sermon this week, Matt. Preaching at St. Mark's Lutheran Church in Asheville, North Carolina. You can catch me at 8:30 or 11 if you're in town for the show. Free drinks afterwards.
Wow. Two sermons. Two services? Wow.
Two services.
You could do two different ones.
Probably be the same. Yep, that's right. That 11 o'clock crowd, they're just not going to get the 8:30 sermon.
Leave it on a cliffhanger?
Yep. You got to stay. You got to stay. You don't know. Oh. Yeah. No, I've got an angle, Matt.
Good. I'm talking about.
Once we get to the text here.
Well, we're going to look at, I think, Acts and John, it looks like. You also have the option of pulling in the dry bones, which is always a fun story.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we will not talk about that today. Acts 2, 1 to 21. Here it is, the famous text that we hear every year, but probably one we should hear every year. When the day of Pentecost had come, the disciples were all together in one place. And suddenly from heaven there came a sound like the rush of a violent wind, and it filled the entire house where they were sitting. Divided tongues as of fire appeared among them, and a tongue rested on each of them. All of them were filled with the Holy Spirit and began to speak in other languages as the Spirit gave them ability. Now there were devout Jews from every nation under heaven living in Jerusalem. And at this sound, the crowd gathered and was bewildered, because each one heard them speaking in the native language of each. Amazed and astonished, they asked, "Are not all these who are speaking Galileans? And how is it that we hear each of us in our own native language?" And here's the part where you got to cue up your reader. Parthians, Medes, Elamites, residents of Mesopotamia, Judea and Cappadocia, Pontus and Asia, Phrygia and Pamphylia, Egypt and the parts of Libya belonging to Cyrene, visitors from Rome, both Jews and proselytes, Cretans and Arabs. In our own languages, we hear them speaking about God's deeds of power. All were amazed and perplexed, saying to one another, "What does this mean?" But others sneered and said, "They are filled with new wine." But Peter, standing with the 11, raised his voice and addressed them. Men of Judea and all who live in Jerusalem, let this be known to you and listen to what I say. Indeed, these are not drunk, as you suppose, for it is only 9 o'clock in the morning. No, this is what was spoken through the prophet Joel. In the last days it will be, God declares, that I will pour out my spirit upon all flesh, and your sons and your daughters shall prophesy, and your young men shall see visions, and your old men shall dream dreams. Even upon my slaves, both men and women, in those days I will pour out my spirit, and they shall prophesy. And I will show portents in the heaven above, and signs in the earth below, blood and fire and smoky mist. The sun shall be turned to darkness, and the moon to blood, before the coming of the Lord's great and glorious day. Then everyone who calls in the name of the Lord shall be saved. Word of God, word of life.
Thanks be to God. I'd like to point your attention, Matt, as we begin this evening. Towards the beginning of things here, there's some ambiguity that I think is worth drawing some attention to. And suddenly from heaven, there came the sound like a rush of a violent wind, and it filled the entire house where they were sitting. Here's my question, Matt. Here's my note. Suddenly from heaven, sounds like a good thing. There's a part of me that says, hey, is that a, later on they realized it was from heaven? Or were they sitting there and they said, oh, look, the heavenly mail service is running today. We've got a message coming from heaven. The heaven here, right, is used both in terms of like the kind of like divine heaven, but also the skies. So there's some ambiguity there that this rush of wind comes from heaven. Means that one hand comes from like above us, but also perhaps comes from, you know, heaven, God, heaven, good place. Heaven. And so I'm intrigued with there's wind, there's flames, there's all this stuff happening. I find it hard to believe that they knew at the time, like, oh, this is clearly from heaven. And that's a little bit more of a reflection piece. So that's the nit I'm picking at right now.
That they're reading back into it. What exactly happened here?
That there's this uncertainty, right? Like that this Pentecost wind blows and it's not clear that this is, here it is. This is the next good new thing. Mm-hmm. And everybody agrees and is like, oh, this is clearly great. Surely there's some uncertainty.
Yeah. The adjectives that are used are, bewildered, mm-hmm. amazed. Amazed is used twice. Astonished, perplexed. So yeah, that seems to be those are the bewildered, amazed, astonished, perplexed ambiguity.
Perplexed.
Ambiguity makes it sound really calm. It's more like chaos and
yeah. That's true. That's true. There's nobody actually saying remain calm at this point, right?
No, it's just Peter saying listen. Listen up.
Yeah, Peter says, listen up. And if this is his like remain calm speech, it's not very good at that, achieving that end, right? Like blood and fire and smoky mist.
Yeah. 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 I'm struck by the names of the different places here too. This makes me think of when you're at a concert and they call out the name of the city that they're in, and you hope they get it right, because every once in a while they call it the wrong name, forget where they are. But this is almost like this is how you get the crowd into it, right? Even when you're preaching, mm-hmm. and you call out certain things, right? And you're like, you're getting the crowd into it. And of course, this is doing that at a much deeper level. But I think there's some of that to it as well, right? That there is this like reaching out and naming specifically each of the different people in the crowd. And then I think of my own language experiences of understanding. I don't know where to take that yet in the sermon, but everybody asks me. We went to Europe last year, and I was like, "Well, how'd you do in Germany with the language?" I was like, "I knew when I went to order food. I had the phrase down. I had it all down. I had it prepared. Yes. I'm gonna do it, and I could make the order. But if they ask me any questions in response."
You're done.
I'd be like, I'm sorry. That was all I had. That was it. That was my. But that is a piece of it here, this idea of that they can understand one another. I mean, that these are the kinds of tongues. This isn't one kind of speaking in tongues. It's the kind of speaking in tongues that results in understanding, which seems important. Or at least in, maybe if not understanding, in connection, in advancing connection, the story. Because yeah. Like you said, there's this ambiguity. They don't understand entirely what's going on, but they're being woven together in a new kind of way.
Yeah. I like that, man. I, at this point in the week, Matt, my plan is to do like personal reflection. I'm still, Matt, like, I really continue to think that like good preaching requires like self-revelation. Mm-hmm. Or at least that's the thing I always find myself wanting to hear in sermons. Because there was a time in my life, Matt, where there was a rush of violent wind that came from the heavens, that was followed by flames, and changed, my life and stuff. Right. So I, going to start reflecting on, our like wildfire, Marshall Fire experience.
Yeah. Yeah.
Through this text, and, do my best to try to end it with good news.
Yeah.
In a way that's not, you know, trite, but like, I like the connection, right? We ended up, you know, we had to live with friends for 3 months. We like had to rely on all these connections and stuff. So mm-hmm. that's probably where the good news, like piece comes out. You know, and tying that to being something of a climate refugee landing in Asheville and this community where I'm going to be preaching. So that's the trajectory I'm looking at, I think.
That's good. That's good. Yeah. 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 Especially, I mean, as much as, I mean, I love fire as a biblical image, mm-hmm. but it can be romanticized, right? Like
yeah.
that poster you used to have in your office of fire good, yeah. but also bad. You have actually lived, you have lived in a really yeah. powerful way. So, yeah, that sounds like a really good illustration.
Yeah. Don't jump, dear preacher, through to the new exciting stuff here without like the destruction that happens on the yeah. road to that. That's required to get there. Right? There are things lost Amen. When they all there are things lost along the way to this connection, right? Like mm-hmm. you can't talk shit about your neighbor anymore in Mesopotamian because they can now understand you. Like secrets, power is changing, right? Like it's
yeah.
Things are lost. Well, Matt, here in the Gospel of John, if you're going to preach on that on Pentecost Sunday, Jesus said to his disciples, a little sliced and diced here, we start in 15, we end up in chapter 16. Jesus said to his disciples, when the advocate comes, and I did a little word study, Matt, because John's been getting real hard to get your arms around the past couple weeks. The advocate here is kind of like your legal counsel, essentially. And more than counsel, like your legal advocate, the person who would, I mean, I guess it is like counsel, but there's a real judicial legal sense here. When the advocate comes, whom I will send you from the Father, the Spirit of truth that comes from the Father, he will testify on my behalf. So there's definitely like a legal courtroom kind of thing going on here, which doesn't seem to be in the news at all these days. You also are to testify because you have been with me from the beginning. All right, so you're going up on the stand. You don't get to plead the fifth. You're going up. I did not say these things to you from the beginning because I was with you, but now I'm going to him who sent me. And yet none of you asked me, where are you going? But because I have said these things to you, sorrow has filled your hearts. Nevertheless, I tell you the truth. It is to your advantage that I go away. For if I do not go away, the advocate will not come to you. But if I go, I will send him to you. And when he comes, he will prove the world wrong about sin and righteousness and judgment about sin, because they do not believe in me, about righteousness, because I'm going to the Father and you will no longer see me, about judgment, because the ruler of this world has been condemned. I still have many things to say to you, but you cannot bear them now. And when the Spirit of truth comes, he will guide you into all the truth. For for he will not speak on his own, but will speak whatever he hears. He will declare to you the things that are to come. He will glorify me because he will take what is mine and declare it to you. All that the Father has is mine. And for this reason, I said that he will take what is mine and declare it to you, very clear and concise good news of Jesus.
We need the Holy Spirit to come and translate this.
Right? Need this advocate to get in here and decipher this. It is a mess, man.
Mm-hmm.
You start to think like you have it, like you got, like, okay, all right, and then it's like, but if I do not go away, the advocate will not come to you. You're like, okay, well, why not? Like, why? What does that mean? The advocate, Matt, I know we, like, in the church, like, we're like, switch this into the Holy Spirit, like, and that's what it is, right? And we tie it up into Pentecost, and that's what's going on here. But that's not the word that's used here. It is the advocate. And if you let John stand on his own, like, I don't know. I don't know what that, I don't know what it means. Who it is? No, man.
Yeah. Well, I mean, part of the good news seems to be that, I got good news and I got bad news. The bad news is that Jesus is going away. But then he's trying to be like, no, it's to your advantage. This is in your self-interest that I go away. It's a good sales technique. But Jesus is going away. Something's going to change, but Jesus is not going to leave the disciples. He's not going to leave us, bereft of any tools, or Jesus is not going to leave us, adrift.
Helpless.
Helpless. So there will be help coming. And I think, you know, I think both of these could be a good word for those moments of transition, right? Where something is being lost. And yet Jesus says, there's going to be this new movement. But both things are important, right? Like you said in the last story, like, something is lost, and here Jesus like alludes to it, that he's going to go away. And yet he's trying to tell them, but hang on, because there's more coming.
One of the best sermons I think I ever preached, Matt, and or wrote. I preached like 5 times in the span of like 4 hours. It was at this church out in Colorado, in the oldest Lutheran church in the state of Colorado. And they do at the Risby Chapel, they do these candlelight services for Christmas, and they're very popular. And so people like come and get packed in and out. And I got to preach it one year. It was very exciting and honor. And it was right waiting for my child to be born. And I preached about how I didn't know that everybody was telling me how great it was going to be. I said that I didn't believe them, right? Like, I didn't believe everybody, right? Because all I knew for sure was that I was going to lose all the things that I knew for sure, right? Like, all the things that I depended on and, like, that I knew of life. I know for sure that when this baby comes, like, all that's gone, and, like, it's a new thing, and that's terrifying, right? I flipped it into good news somehow, I feel like. But people liked the baby thing. So people were into the baby talk, and saying something fairly honest about expecting a baby that you don't hear in public very often.
Did you use the phrase uterine parasite in those sermons, or did you say that?
I might have at that point in life. I wouldn't put it past me. Oh, time. Maybe, you know, to lean into that, like, I don't know, like, I can't, like, I really don't know what this means, Matt. And, like, we could sit down and, like, spend a whole lot of time parsing it out, and maybe we can start to come together with some cohesive, like, stuff to just take away from this. But I think you slide into, like, Indo-Jesus here really quickly, reading stuff into this. But maybe the confusion is a feature and a bug. Right? Mm-hmm. There is a new thing coming, and you don't know what it's going to mean.
Yeah. Yep.
You can't know what it's going to mean for you.
Yeah.
You can hear and trust, if you want to lean that direction, which I have difficulty with, that it's going to be good, that it's good news, right?
Yeah.
But you can't know what's coming, right? And that's the same thing with the Pentecost text, right? They all get connected. They can, all of a sudden, everybody can understand everybody's language. Maybe that's where you jump in with my, like, the thing I thought of not being able to talk shit about people in another language anymore, like as this like secondary effect of it, to be like, oh no, things are different now. Like they're going to be on these butterfly. Like who knows what this means for us and for the world, that all of a sudden we can all understand each other. Like sounds good, but I'm guessing there's probably some downsides, or at least things that I would experience as downsides.
Yeah. That's really good. I like that. I'm gonna run with some of that. We don't know what's next. Yeah. Yeah, it's a moment of change and transition, and I always like Pentecost because it feels sort of exciting in that way. But to bring forth some of that, some of the uncertainty of it, but in a, it's not uncertainty in the abstract, right? Like it's very, very real. So, Amen. Well, what are we listening to while we prepare to preach on this text?
A couple weeks ago, Matt went to the Orange Peel to see Waxahachie, and the band that opened for them that I wasn't super impressed with, to be honest, was called Good Morning, which is an Australian band. And it did, though, while I didn't necessarily enjoy their performance a whole lot, it did trigger some nostalgia for me. And it made me remember a band that I'd forgotten that I was really into in college for like a month. One of those kinds of things. I don't know. Did you have that experience, Matt, where like,
yeah,
you're like,
sometimes, this month, yeah,
I am, yep, all the way in with this band, and then like it just disappears, right? And for me, one of those bands was Australian folk rock band The Waifs. Do you know The Waifs, Matt?
Nope.
Okay, well, they're excellent. Okay. And it hit me, and it hit like, ugh, I got really into them. I feel like when the Vinyl Spouse was studying abroad in that semester, and there's a song about being in London and like your significant others in Australia kind of thing, right? And I was like, what was that band called? And I got home, looked it up, like, it's The Waifs. And then I started just like falling down the rabbit hole. We're watching YouTube videos of them like performing at E-Town, like all this stuff. And they're great. You got to go back and listen to it. I'm going to put London Still, which is the song about I'm in London still. It's so good. About being separated from those you love and dreaming of being together again. I think it fits with this. I'm leaving, Jesus says. So you can go ahead and cue up The Waifs. The other thing I didn't realize that until I fell down this rabbit hole, like, so they're like folk rock, but they've got this like jazzy thing going on. Also, one of them is like a virtuoso on the harmonica, which I didn't realize until like I watch YouTube videos where they're just crushing it. But the thing, there's like heavy jazz acoustic guitar going on. And then like I connected the dots and was like, oh, that's right. In the mid to early aughts, like jazz like made this like Norah Jones sort of like incursion into like popish music. And I was like, yeah. I started hearing it through Norah Jones. And I was like, oh, this is like folk jazz, like that's what's okay, that's a thing that happened in the aughts. So
yeah
and they wrote it.
Yeah No, that's
so check them out, The Waifs.
All right, yeah.
In that E-Town show that I watched them play with Jim Lauderdale in Boulder while I lived there, not knowing that it was happening. God, isn't that the worst? I should have just, it was so easy to get E-Town tickets, I could have just walked over there. They did a cover at the end in the encore of You Ain't Going Nowhere by The Byrds. And it made me realize that's such a good song. Like, it's not by The Byrds, actually. It's by it's a Bob Dylan song.
Dylan, yeah.
It's a Dylan song, covered, yeah, by The Byrds. And I tried to find, like, a good cover. And I found a cover by, oh, gosh, what's his name? Who was in the Once movie guy? Glenn Hansard.
Oh, Hansard, yeah.
Yeah, Hansard. They covered it, but it wasn't very good. I didn't think so. It can't beat The Byrds. Like The Byrds cover is the best cover. So listen to that. Cause I wanted to stay in the aughts there. It's that Once was happening too. What a moment for acoustic music. And last but not least, always looking for a good new fire song. I'm going Fire in the Sky, Anderson Dot Pock, which is a groove. Check it out.
Nice. Good playlist with, that's a personal context. Great stuff. Cool. I'm going to go with, I wanted to try Wind, as the, the theme Ooh. This time. So I went with Windy by The Association, which it's a song my mom used to listen to on the Old East radio station. Everyone knows it's Windy. It's just, you know, it's got like a sound. It's a particular sound. The Wind Cries Mary by Jimi Hendrix. Jimi Hendrix of Seattle fame. I walked by his statue when I was up there.
How's it going?
Made a little pilgrimage. Still there outside the Blick Art Store. The Wind Cries Mary by Jimi Hendrix. And then, not an obscure song, but not one I always associate with Pentecost. And now I'm kind of putting in conversation with Pentecost. But Blowing in the Wind by Bob Dylan. Listen to those as you prepare your Pentecost sermons.
I did hear, I haven't watched the We Are the World documentary, but I hear there's some pretty entertaining clips that concern Bob Dylan.
Yeah.
Evidently, he was not scheduled to be there and showed up and didn't really know that he was there either. Evidently, Stevie Wonder worked with him and found it, because he eventually was like, so what, why am I here? And everybody's like, nobody really knows. And Stevie Wonder's like, here's what you're going to do.
That's great.
Throw it, so.
That's great.
Shout out to Stevie Wonder, friend of the pod.
Friend of the pod. Indeed. Well, it's been real.
Real vinyl.
Ooh.